Open your Bibles, please, to 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3. I hope you'll take seriously these Bible studies. I'm sort of giving you some things that I normally wouldn't mention publicly about the Christian life and the study of it. Tonight I'm going to teach on the science of emotions and their control. The science of emotions and their control. I believe it'll help you if you listen carefully, especially if you're a leader, and everybody's a leader in some respect, your mother, father. Turn me down just a little bit, would you please? And so I want you to listen to me very carefully. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 23. And this is his commandment, that we should believe on the name of his Son, Jesus Christ. Now here it is. And love one another. Now it says this is his commandment. In other words, God commands us to love one another. Then he goes on and says, as he gave us commandment. Remember the first, what he's talking about here? When they ask him, what is the greatest commandment? And he said, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, mind, body, and soul. And the second is likened to the first, to love thy neighbor as thyself. Now again, that's a commandment. A commandment. Don't forget, to love is a commandment. Now please turn to Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter number 4. One little verse, verse 4. Philippians chapter 4, verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say, rejoice. That word rejoice means rejoice. What it means is keep on joying. It means have joy and have joy and have joy and have joy. And it says rejoice. That means keep on joying. Then it says always keep on joying all of your life. And it said again I say, rejoice. That's a command. Didn't say, if you do this and so, you can rejoice. God says, I command you to rejoice, just like he commanded you to us to love a while ago. Now turn to Ephesians. Ephesians, chapter number 4, verse number 26. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse number 26. Be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. Now look at me. God told us in 1 John chapter 3 that we're supposed to love. Commanded us to. And he commanded us, Philippians 4:4, to rejoice. Now he commands us in Ephesians 4:26 to be angry. That's a command of God. To be angry. Now I want to say this before I pray. God never gives a command that your will cannot carry out. God never gives a command that you cannot decide to do. So if God says that you're supposed to love, then you don't have to pray for God to give you love. The truth is, God commands you to love. He commands you to be angry. He commands you to rejoice. And he never gives a command without giving you the wherewithal through the will to, I will to do what God says. That means you can say, I will love and love. I will rejoice and rejoice. I will be angry and be angry. That means you can decide to love, you can decide to rejoice, and you can decide to be angry. I honestly believe tonight I'm going to give you one of the great secrets of my life, and I believe it can be yours. Father, bless our study tonight. I do want to help, and I pray you'd help me to do so. Bless, I pray, as we think of these things. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. All right, sit up straight, look right this way, and I want to give you something to help you. I have studied literally hours this matter of emotions, and I have carefully come to some conclusions about man's emotions. I want to give you tonight some of those and then illustrate what I'm talking about. The first conclusion at which I've arrived is this. The emotions of man should be chosen or controlled by the will. Are you listening? The emotions of a person should be chosen by the will. That means that I should decide when I get happy. I should decide when I get angry. I should decide when I get sad. I should be in control of my emotions. Now, don't misunderstand me. None of us does everything exactly like it's ought to be done, and sometimes people can make me angry. but they should not. People should not make me angry. I should decide when I get angry. And if people make me angry, I should decide to let them make me angry, because I should decide my emotions. You see, if I shouldn't decide, then God wouldn't tell me what kind of emotions to have. God commands me to be angry. All right, if God commands me to be angry, then God commands me to do something that I can do. And what I can do or what I do, I must decide with the will to do them. So that means that I should. Now, again, I say, nobody's perfect in this, but I should work toward the goal of being able to determine when I get angry and at whom I get angry and at what I get angry. The same thing is true about joy. I should be able to decide when I have joy and what causes me to have joy. I should decide my emotions. I liken the emotions to a cockpit of an airplane. I caught an airplane in Hartford, Connecticut today, and I looked in the cockpit as I walked in, and there were hundreds and hundreds of little buttons to push and levers and so forth. And there were two men in there, a pilot and a co-pilot, and it was their job. I think there were three this morning. It was a bigger jet. And it was their job to get us airborne and to keep us safe and help us to arrive in Chicago. Now, to do that properly, they had to learn which one of the buttons to push and which one of the levers to pull and so forth. Now, your emotions ought to be that way. You heard me say this, sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm blue. My disposition depends on you. That's not the Bible. Not the Bible. No. You should will your disposition. You should decide with your will when to get angry. You should decide with your will when to get sad. You should decide with your will when to rejoice and so forth. All right? I said again, God never gives us a command that we cannot will to do. So then, I will decide when I'm sad. Let me illustrate. Every morning when I drive to work, nearly every morning, sometime during the day I do this, but almost always in the morning, I drive down to Wentworth Street. We live in Munster. I drive down to Wentworth Street in Calumet City. I turn right, and I drive down Wentworth through Lansing and then into Calumet City. When I get just across the little Calumet River there, on the right side, there's an apartment, two apartment buildings, and one of those, they're twin apartments, but my mother lived there. And I slow down to about 10 to 15 miles an hour and go very slowly as I pass my mother's apartment where she lived. Now, in about, 10 or 15 seconds, maybe less, I say to my mother, I love you and I appreciate you. And I picture her sitting inside that second apartment window on the second floor, second apartment in the front. I picture my mother sitting there at the in the living room in that little apartment. Now, that makes me sad. I miss my mother. Oftentimes, a tear will escape my eye. And oftentimes, I will feel a heaviness. And sometimes, for quite some time, I'll feel a bit, sad. All right, now, what makes me feel sad? Well, I could go, if I wanted to, I could go down another street. I decide to grieve my mother and her going. I go to the cemetery. I try to make it once a week and almost always do. And I go to my mother's burial place. Now, I know when I go there how I'm going to feel, because I know what that place makes me feel. So I am, with my will, deciding to grieve. You understand what I'm saying? I'm deciding to grieve. All right? Now, I also know places that I enjoy going. There's certain things on my trips every week that I enjoy. Certain things at the airport I enjoy. And I know I'm going to enjoy it. There's certain food that I enjoy. I enjoy preferably the kind that you can chew and swallow. But there's certain food. Now, I know what makes me... Now, okay, what do I do? If I feel like I should be sad, then I push a little button over here, and I do that which makes me feel sad. If I feel like I should be happy over here, I rejoice a bit, I do that. People often ask me, and this is miraculous. Brother House, how can you go from vacation Bible school at 12:30 to a funeral at 2 o'clock? You know how I can? It's all because I control my emotions. I decide how I feel. I stood behind this pulpit and acted a fool, and an hour and a half later, stood behind this pulpit and tried to comfort a family. Now, how did I do it? I know what makes me happy, prepares me for vacation Bible school. I know what prepares me to sympathize and empathize with a family who's lost a loved one. Let me give you an example. And I'm going a little ahead of myself here. But this will be good for you. I finished vacation Bible school with all of its sacred ritual and went to my office. Now, in just a little while, not many minutes, I had a funeral that I had to conduct. Now, I know what gets me ready for a funeral. So what do I do? Okay, I got in the car. I drove out to the house of the people who had lost a loved one, the lady who had lost a mother, husband. I drove out to the house, and I parked about two houses down across the street so they wouldn't know I was there. And I looked at that house and pictured that man having sat there with his wife. He's no longer there. I pictured that man sitting at the table with his wife. He's no longer there. And I prayed for that. Now, look, this way, I've got to get myself in a mood to comfort somebody after having played around with Silly Billy and Pee Wee and Footy and the old timer and even the devil. And so, because the devil was here, I found out he was here finally, boys and girls. But I'm saying, I've got to get myself. Now, okay, I must control my emotions. I can't come in here after having all the foolishness of vacation at Bible school and have a funeral. Unless I am in control of my emotions. The Bible says a man that can control his spirit is greater than a man that can conquer a city. Which means it's more difficult for me to control my emotions than it is for somebody to conquer a city. So I'm saying that if you are commanded by God, I just fly off the handle. Well, you don't have to fly off the handle. Unless you're supposed to fly off the handle, unless you're somebody you love needs to see you fly off the handle, you shouldn't fly off the handle. Now, so I said the first thing is this. The emotion should be controlled by the will. That means I will decide when I get angry. I will decide when I get sad. I will decide when I get happy. People say, Brother House, how can you go from a funeral to a wedding? That's easy. It's all about the same thing. Or how can you go from a wedding to a funeral? Sometimes I'll have a wedding, and that after one day, I had two weddings and two funerals. Funeral, wedding, funeral, wedding. And somebody will ask, how could you do that? Because I have learned, I think I've learned somewhat, to control my emotions. How can you go from marital counseling, trying to save a marriage at 8 o'clock in the morning, to vacation Bible school at 9 o'clock in the morning? How can you get up for all those kids and holler and scream when you just got through trying to save somebody's marriage? Tell you exactly why. I'm not like some of you guys. Every time your wife does something home, you fly off the handle. Or some of you ladies, every time your husband disappoints you, you fly off the handle. That means that external circumstances and stimuli determine when you fly off the handle when you get mad. And that means you've not conquered your spirit or conquered your emotion. Jesus, again I say, he commands us to rejoice, and so if he commands us to rejoice, we can choose to rejoice. He commands us to love, and that means we can decide to love. He commands us to be angry, and that means we can decide to be angry. All these emotions at our disposal, all these little buttons, if I need to be angry, I know what makes me angry, so I'll think about or do the thing that makes me angry. I'll go to that in a few minutes also. Now, the second thing conclusion at which I arrived was this. The determining factor, don't miss this. The determining factor for my emotions should be the need of others. Do you need me to be angry? Now, there are times your child needs you to be angry. Now, there are times that you may not think you need, but there are times that this church needs me to be angry. But I must not be angry because I can't help it. I must decide to be angry if you need me to be angry. And you mothers and fathers must not be irritated and made angry by your children. Listen to me now. You must decide yourself when they need you to be angry. So, if the will, if I can will to be angry, will to be happy, will to rejoice, will to be sad, then the determining factor is the need of others. There are sometimes when you need a scolding. I do not ever want to give you one, but there are times this church needs a scolding. There are times when you need sympathy, and I need to will to give you sympathy. There are times when you need encouragement, and I must be able to decide or will myself to be in an encouraged mood so I can encourage you. Hey, you watch me when I walk through that door, and you folks have been here for 34 years will vouch for this. I'm pretty well the same when I walk through that door every time. Now, it may be that sometime I have just come off cloud nine. It may be someday I've come off valley 10. It may be that some good things have happened. It may be some bad things have happened. But wait a minute. I know how to prepare myself to walk through that door. You wouldn't want me to walk through that door sometimes all the way down to the bottom. And you wouldn't want me to walk sometimes shouting and praying. You wouldn't want to say, I wonder what mood the preacher's going to be in. And that's exactly what some of you fellows have to say about your wife. Wonder what kind of mood the old lady's going to be in when I get home tonight. Or wonder what kind of mood the old man's going to be in when he gets home from work tonight. He shouldn't have to say that. And you shouldn't have to say that. I'm simply saying that if God commands me to be angry, then I am to decide when I'm angry, and I am to decide my emotions on the basis of what your need is. What I'm giving you tonight is foreign. It's a foreign language to people and even to people in this room tonight. But I said again, I risk my case and I base my case on the fact that God would not have told you to be angry unless you could decide when you get angry. And God would not have told you to rejoice unless you could decide when to rejoice. I said, number one, I've come to the conclusion that my emotion should be controlled by my will. I said also that God never commands what the will cannot perform. I said next, the determining factor for those emotions should be your need. Hey, the need of others should be what makes you determine with your will what kind of emotion that you're going to display in their presence. I wish you could get this. I hunger for you too. That's why people kill people. They fly off the handle. Somebody else controls their emotion. You say to somebody else, here, I'll let you decide what mood I'm in. I'm not going to do that. All right? Then that leads me to the next place. So if my will controls my emotions, and if the determining factor is the need of others, number three, so I must know how to create in me the emotion you need. You follow me? If I can decide what emotion I have, and if that decision is based upon your need, then I must learn and know how to create in me that emotion you need. If I come from a battle to a funeral, then I must know how to get myself in shape for that funeral between my office and this pulpit. The average person doesn't know himself. The average person doesn't know how to handle himself. Or treat himself, or prepare himself, or govern himself. Number four, if, follow my logic, if my emotion should be controlled by my will, I decide, and the determining factor is the need of others, then I must know how to create in me the emotion you need. Then number four, so I have studied what creates those emotions. For example, some things always make me happy. You follow me? Some things always make me happy. Now, in my office, I have a list of those things written down. What makes me happy? What I do? If I feel sadness coming on, I grab that list. Are you listening to me? I grab that list and look at it. That you call that science. You call that studying your own emotions as carefully as you'd study how to cut a frog up in biology class. And by the way you treat people is a lot more important than whether a frog gets cut up or not. So, Every woman in this room ought to find the needs of your husband. And when he needs you to be a certain way, you ought to know how to get yourself that way so you can be what he needs you to be. And vice versa, the husband the same way toward the wife. All right? Some things always make me happy. There's some statements that always make me happy. There's some thoughts that always... Well, okay, if there's some things that always make me happy, and some thoughts that always make me happy, and some statements that always make me happy, well, bless your little pea-picking heart, I can decide when to get happy by pulling out those statements and those thoughts and those things. That's not so smart. It just makes sense. You can decide when you're happy if you want to be. I've said again and again, you have a good day when the day is over. If it's a good day, write down what happened that day and make another one. Have a bad day, when you get through, write down what things happened that day and don't make another one. But you ought to be able to determine what emotion you're in, what feeling you have, because people whom you love need certain things from you. And unless you know how to create those attitudes and emotions in yourself, you'll not be able to be what they need you to be. I know what challenges me. I know what angers me. The Lord told me I'm supposed to be angry. I'm going to talk about the science of anger one of these Wednesday nights. But I know what makes me mad. I preached a sermon Monday night in Vermont, and I needed to get mad. But now, you won't believe this, but I have a hard time getting angry. I do not like to be angry. So, I was in a new church. I didn't know who would make me mad. Now here, I'd know exactly where to go. So I had to get angry. I had to get angry first. Now if I get angry, I can stay angry. So I looked around the building to see somebody I thought didn't like me. And there he was, sitting right the second row from the back. I just stared at him. And then I was going to talk about homosexuals for a second. And I needed to get mad at him. And right beside him, there it sat. See? Now, by the time I got up, I was mad. Don't you see what I'm saying? Those two guys made me mad. Now, I didn't look at them, so I need to look at them. As I was saying, I'm glad to be here, I didn't look at them. Because I wouldn't have said I'm glad to be here. I wrote down on my outline, under where it said homosexuals, I wrote down, look now at the two fellows, second row from the back. So I was happy as a lark. And then I started to say, I preached that sermon on Sundays coming. Remember that sermon on Sundays coming? I said, I start off saying, we're going to talk list a bunch of sin. I say, let the queers have their time right now. This is your hour and the power of darkness, but Sunday's coming. I said, queers, have your time. There he was. Enjoy yourself, buddy. I didn't say that. I didn't point. But he made me in his mood. You see, those people needed me to get angry at a few things. Well, I had to get angry. So I had to find somebody who'd make me angry. And I found them. Here, it's no problem at all. But there's certain things that touch my heart. Illustration. I'll get that in a minute. There's certain things that touch my heart. Now, I write those things down. See, what you do is you try to remember them, but you don't. Carry with you those little doojiggers right there. 3x5 cards. I got them right here, right now. Notes on these things right here, right now. John Nordman, contact John Nordman. Call Viola Walden about Viola Walden dormitory. And let's see, I got another one here. Randy Taylor, some money I want to send Randy Taylor. And then some money I want him to send me. And financial idea about the books with Dennis Coral and a soul I'm supposed to go witness to and the directions to get there. And now, these things are my memory. Did I tell you the story about two old men that met? Huh? How many have never heard about that? And one of them lost his memory? How many heard it? Two old men met. They were old, 66 years old, nearly 67. And one of them said to the other one, said, "Hey, Joe, how you doing?" He said, "Fine, doing fine." He said, "I'm not doing so good, Joe. So I'm losing my memory." "And I was losing mine, too, but," said, I found some medicine that helped me. I couldn't remember a thing, but," said, "I took this medicine and," said, "I feel better and I remember everything now." "Oh," he said, "Joe, what was it?" He said, "It was, what's that flower that smells good and has thorns on it and grow it down in Tyler, Texas?" He said, "Rose." "Yeah, rose, what was that medicine that I..." Anyway, don't trust your memory. Don't trust it. Now look, make a scientific study of what makes you mad. Write it down. You might want to get mad someday. Make a scientific study of what touches your heart and write it down and know where it is. You need to have your heart touched. You say, "Well, that's mechanic." No, you call that discipline. "I then will submit myself only to that which brings the desired emotion that you need me to have." You call that leadership. Now, if I'm not leading, I don't need to do that. If you, okay, here's a guy, he said he's a leader, but he's hot-headed. "Hey, I don't like what you said. Hey, put him up there, buddy." No, he's a follower because somebody else decided the mood he got into. See, the person that determines the mood is the one that's leading. The person who reacts to the mood is the one who's following. And if you're going to lead, that's as a mother in the home, as a father in the home, as a husband in the home, any place that you have a responsibility to lead, as a teacher in the classroom, you should act and they react. But if you're going to be a follower, you can just react all the time. But somebody has got to be the mood determiner. Here's an illustration. I have written down in my office, and I have written down in the Bible that I use to preach with around the country, 12 things that inspire me. Always do. I mean, I can be in the middle of a fight and think about those things, and I'll be inspired. I have them written down. Now, folks, you have to understand, I preach all across this nation, and I preach some places where I'd be better off if I could draw a curtain and not look at the people. Tonight, for example. But I mean, you don't understand this. And I'm up there, and sometimes I just can't get with it. I just, every time I think about this, I think about Dr. Lee Robertson, the famous Lee Robertson, was preaching on the street corner one day. Anyway, they built a little improvised platform, and nobody was listening. And there was the great Lee Robertson preaching on the street corner, and nobody was there, except an old drunk was leaning up against a post looking up at him like that. And Dr. Robertson's preaching, folks passing by, nobody listened to him. And the old drunk looked up and said, "Fellow, some days you just ain't got it, have you?" Well, some days I just haven't got it. Tonight, for example, I don't have it. But I'm simply saying that I know what inspires me. You said, "Brother Howes, when you repeat those illustrations, what you doing? We've heard those. I don't tell them for you. I tell them for me. I tell them to get me back with it because they inspire me." And I'll look, many a time when I'm preaching on the road, I'll look back here and I'll need a little help, and I'll say, "Jackie boy." And I'll tell the story about Jackie boy. I can tell the story about my mama putting me on her knee and saying the Bible's the word of God, and boy, you let me do that, and I'm gone. That's launching. I'm in orbit. One of those is Mrs. Bethel. Let me go back and sit on Mrs. Bethel's knee with my little old bare feet hanging down and my little old shoulder sticking out of that little white T-shirt. In fact, I'm about to shout right now. And a little shoulder sticking out of the white T-shirt, my little knee sticking out of the khaki pants. And Mrs. Bethel said, "You know Jesus loves you." And I say, "Does he love me as much as he loves little boys and girls that have on shoes?" And she says, "He probably loves you more than loves anybody in this room." I'm loose then. I'm loose. In fact, I'm going to forget the Bible study and start preaching. I'm loose then. But I know what turns me loose. Now you listen carefully to me. People all across this building say to me this: "I believe you preach better in the summertime than you preach any other time." I don't know if that's true or not, but you know what I do know? I do know that in the summertime the crowds are not as big as they are in the spring and fall here in winter. I do know that people have their minds on other things in the summertime. And I prepare my summer sermons, listen to me, on purpose. Not needing big crowds. I size the crowd up when I go preach somewhere and decide whether I can use them or not. If I can't use the crowd, I'm oblivious to the fact that they're there and preach like I'm on the radio, because I don't need them. What am I doing? I am controlling my own will. I will be happy. By the way, if I want to be happy, I'll get happy, and you can't keep me from it. No way. If I want to get sad, you can laugh all you want to, and I'll be sad. But wait a minute. I want to be sad if you need me to be sad. If others need me to be happy, if somebody may need me to be sympathetic, somebody may need me to give comfort, somebody may need me to say something humorous, somebody may need me to present a challenge, so that I must will what kind of emotion that I exert, and then I must do it on the basis of what you need, which means I must know how to create in me the emotion that you need, which means that I have to study what creates these emotions. Illustration. Tuesday night, I was preaching in Vermont, and I needed to feel compassionate. Now, while everybody else was looking around like you're doing now, I was watching the audience. I was looking for somebody with whom I could have compassion. Third row here on the left was a man that had greasy fingers. Obviously, he was a mechanic. Now, wait a minute. I was trying to love those people. And I saw those greasy fingernails and fingers and hands. And I relived his day. And everybody was singing and looking around. I was reliving his day. That man got up this morning early, went down to the mechanic shop. That man's been under a greasy old car all day long or doing mechanic work all day. That man is worn out. For 8 hours or more, he's been doing mechanic work, and that man is worn out. But that man heard Dr. Jack Howes is coming to this area to preach, and that man wanted to hear me. So that man missed his supper tonight. Maybe he stopped and got a sandwich at a fast food place. And that man got down there early, and it's hot in here tonight, and that guy is worn out. God bless him. And before I began to preach, I love that guy. I loved it. It may be that he's never done any mechanic work in his life. It may be he just hadn't washed his hands in 5 years. I don't know. You know what's wrong with you? You don't think. You don't think. You folks that preach on chapel at the high school, look out of those kids and realize some of the heartbreaks and the. That's why I have no problem preaching here, because I know your burdens. I know your heartaches. I know what you need. I think I know what you need. Sometimes I misjudge what you need, but if I do, I do it unselfishly and on purpose, and I must know how to create in my mind and in my heart the emotion that I feel that you need. I know preachers. I used to be one of them when I was just started out. It's Christmas time. I'm going to start taking vacations from December 15th to January 15th. The hardest time to pastor church in the hardest 2 weeks is Christmas time. The hardest season is summertime. But the hardest little short period, Christmas time. Because folks don't give a flip, and I'm talking about most of you, about their church during Christmas time. It's mama and grandma and grandpa. So I know preachers look out on Christmas time, the crowd is down, and they let the folks have it who are there. Look at this crowd. Good night. Oh, we love God. Oh, we love God enough to come to church on Christmas. They don't need it. They're there. So then they grow in grace a little bit, and they say, okay, when they get back, I'll get them. I'll let them have it. It's too late. You can fuss at your people on January the 1st all you want to about not coming to church on Christmas, but they can't come last Christmas now. So let them have it December the 20th. I was preaching in Pinellas Park, Florida, years ago. Building seated 800 people. They had 400 extra chairs out because Dr. Jack Howes was coming. Walked on the platform and had 400 people there. We overflowed that building, overflowed those pews. Nobody on the pews. Everybody's on the extra chairs. 800-seat auditorium, put 400 seats out, and only 400 people showed up. The pastor was on the platform weeping. I mean, tear weeping.
He said, "Brother Howes, I know you're disappointed."
I said, "What at?"
"Well," he said, "because the crowd is down."
I said, "No." I said, "People sitting in pews don't make me happy." I said, "The Bible's as true as if we had 1,200 people here. I'm going to heaven just as real as if we had 1,200 people here. My Bible doesn't say rejoice because people are filling up the pews. My Bible said rejoice because your name is written in heaven." And I preached up a fire. I preached like a house of fire that night. Brother Young used to love to tell an illustration how when he used it in one of his sermons, how he and I were down in Baton Rouge together. And on Monday night, the place was packed and jammed and folks sitting and standing up in the back. And I tried to preach up a storm. Tuesday morning, I think 17 people showed up. And Brother Young says, "I tried to preach up a storm." You know why? Because I'm just as saved when 17 are there if it's 1,700 there. So I refuse to let how many bodies are in my presence determine my joy. If everybody here right now stuck your tongue out at me, it wouldn't affect me at all. Because I don't get happy because your tongue is in. I don't mean to upset you tonight, but I don't give a flip what you do with your tongue. Your tongue does not make me happy. Well, what it says sometimes determines my... But no. I'm simply saying, I will decide. I will decide. I go preach some places sometimes where people are sitting out there making faces at me. What am I going to do? No, not unless I feel like the people need it. So people go unfed because the pastor is not in control of his spirit. I prepare my outline that way. I put things in my outline that will make me the emotion I feel like I need to be at that point. Sometimes in my outline, I wish you could see them. Sometimes I'll have GR-R-R-R. You know why? Because I want to grr then. Sometimes I'll have them outline, "Shout here. This ought to make you," I'll write down, "This ought to make you happy. Your name's written in heaven. Live it up. Praise the Lord." Why? Folks, crime is caused by people that don't control their own spirit. Divorces are caused by people that have not learned to control their own spirit. Church splits are caused by people that have not yet learned to control their own spirit. If you'll make a science of it, what makes me mad? What makes me happy? What makes me sad? What touches my heart? What makes me rejoice? Write it down. If you want to get in a certain mood, find out what gets you in that mood. Pull it out of the file and get that way. You say, "Well, that sounds so cut and dried." All science is cut and dried. H2O always makes water. At College Chapel, I look at the students, and I try to figure what they need me to be. So, I try to find those that can help me be what the student body needs me to be. Now listen to me, folks. You don't have to whack your child across the face or across the bottom even. That's a pretty sorry way to live. I don't think the welfare ought to take your child because you fly off the handle and whack him across the bottom or across the top. I don't think they'll take your child. But I don't think they ought to have the chance to take your child either. Nobody ought to get mad at a child and slap him across the face, or nobody get mad at a child and slap him across the bottom. If your child must be disciplined, you discipline the child because the child needs to be disciplined. If the child needs to see you angry, you decide the child needs to see me angry. And be ye angry. But it goes on to say, and sin not. Which means the kind of anger you have should be the kind of anger that you choose to have, so you won't sin because of that anger. Well, he just turns me off. Well, don't give him the switch. Well, there's something about her that just grates on my nerve. I would hate to be that way. I mean that. I would hate for my disposition to be determined by an ogre. Now, if she grates on your nerves, listen to me now. Then don't get around there. Or better still, learn how to control your nerves yourself. Years ago, we had I first came here. It's been just about 33 years ago this last month. We had a knockdown drag out over whether I'd stayed or not. We set aside a night when I answered questions. The people would ask me questions. We stayed here that night till 11 o'clock, folks asking me questions. I went down the basement of my house, and I wrote out every question I thought that I could think of the people might ask me. Then I made a 2 or 3 page outline answering every question. So when the folks asked me questions, I didn't have to spontaneously answer. I just pulled that question that I predicted they would ask me out of the file. And there was my outline completely prepared to answer their question. If I tell you a secret, will you keep it quiet? It's a rumor. Will you keep it quiet? 9 Tuesdays out of 10, about after we had noon, we have lunch somewhere with pastors and full-time workers. We had one this week in Vermont. 9 weeks out of 10, and sometimes more than that, have a question-and-answer session where I stand up after the meal, and the pastors and Christian workers ask me questions. Do you know that I do not answer their questions? I have 10 things that I want to get over at that question-and-answer time. And you can ask me any question you want to, and I can answer it with those 10 things. You won't tell people this, will you? I'm sure you won't. You think I'm going to go in there that stupid question and answer time and let them decide what I say? Sometimes I'll answer their question, but I'm saying I'll always get my 10 answers. One of the things I say I want to get over is that Christians ought not to run with the new evangelicals and the liberal crowd. Okay, ask me a question, Tim, any kind of question, about anything. Beg your pardon? Well, I just feel about the Catholic Church that the Protestants came out of it, and a lot of Protestants have gone liberal and new evangelical. And God's people shouldn't be running around with these new evangelical and liberal people. Ask me a question, Lane. Any kind of question. Beg your pardon? We'll be using the only Bible that fundamentalists ought to use, not the new evangelical Bible, because if you do that, you're running around the new evangelical crowd, and you shouldn't do that. Ask me another question about anything. Name it. What? How are the Cubs doing? The problem with the Cubs is this. The Cubs are letting the wrong influence come and coach their team and manage their team, just like fundamentalists are letting the wrong influence come, and we're running with the wrong crowd. See? Ask me a question, any kind of question. Ask me a question, Brother Clare. Is the Pope still a Catholic? Ask me an intelligent question. Truth is, he doesn't know. About some other subject, ask me a question. Ask, what? Sir? No, that's not a good question. What? Clinton's health care program? I'll tell you exactly what. Clinton is getting the wrong advice. And he's getting the wrong advice because he's got the wrong people around him, and nobody's going to live right with the wrong people around him, just like fundamental people running with the wrong crowd. Do you think I'm going to waste my time answering little flippant questions? I've got one life to live, and I'm not going to waste it answering, letting them decide what I say. You see? Now, for example, when I preach a funeral, if I can find where the people live, I drive to their house. I usually do it at night, and I park in front of their house, and I hurt for them. I try real hard to find some place where I spent some time with that person, where I can go and relive the time that we were together. Now, what am I doing? I'm trying to empathize and sympathize and have compassion. I am studying. Listen, science simply means study. Why can't you study yourself? If you don't, they're going to be studying you at some institution. Now, why can't you study yourself? Why can't you come to the place in your life, oh, it just makes me mad? I'd be ashamed. I mean that. You know that sometimes when I'm about to preach somewhere, I may be going to preach on hell, and a guy gets up and sings Mansion Over the Hilltop. Or I may be preaching on heaven, and some guy sings a great judgment morning. You say, what do you do? I don't listen. Or if I'm preaching a sermon that I think needs joy or delight, and a guy gets up and sings a song with a rock beat, I don't listen to it. Now, there are times when the congregation needs me to get mad. I was preaching in a town, it's been 20 years ago now, in New York State, a convention, a state conservative Baptist convention. I preached the first time in the afternoon at the First Baptist Church in a New York town, New York State, not the city, but upstate. I walked in the church and sat down back in the back, and before I preached, the pastor got up and he said, our youth choir is going to sing at the convention. Out walks the youth choir. Teenager number one, a male, no undershirt on, shirt tail out, shirt unbuttoned. You can see his entire body. You can see his navel, you can see his stomach, his abdomen. You can see the hair on his chest. He walks out. Second person is a female. She walks out, and you could actually see her underclothing because her miniskirt was so short. Not a single male in that teenage choir had his shirt tail in or had his shirt buttoned. They all had their chest and their stomach showing. And before they started singing, they started going like this. I decided that that crowd needed me to get mad. They did. But honestly, I didn't get mad because of the choir. I got mad because I said, I'm going to have to sacrifice my reputation with this crowd on the altar to try to let these folks hear one man of God tell the truth one time. I stood to speak. I never raised my voice. I spoke deliberately. I said, you need what I'm about to say. I said, that choir that sang a while ago was the most pitiful excuse for a Christian teenage choir I've ever heard in my life. I said, not only were they dressed wrong and the song was wrong, but I said, every one of them left after the service. They're gone. But word leaked back that what I was doing, and they came back and stood back in the back. Now, wait a minute. I decided that that's what they needed. Why don't some of you fellows become men? Did you know that the size of this pimple here, they call your bicep, not determine whether you're a man or not? Though I have an amazing one myself. That doesn't determine whether you're a man or not. Do you know what determines whether you're a man or not? If you are in charge of the situation. And if you say, but the hounds, where does the Holy Spirit come in here? He is the one who leads you to know what kind of a decision that you should will to be in charge of the situation. I love that little statement, and I'll close with this. I love that little statement where the Quaker said to the fellow, I would not hurt thee. I would not do thee ill. I would not so lift up my hand to harm thee, but thou art standing where I'm about to shoot. That guy was in control. He was in control. The penitentiaries are filled tonight with people like most of you, whose disposition is determined by external conditions and by other people instead of by your own will. And God said, He commanded you to be angry. He commanded you to rejoice. He commanded you to love. He commanded you to use all of the emotions that He's given you. He likewise commanded you with your will to choose that emotion. And the reason you choose that emotion, the criterion is, what do people that you love need you to be? If that's the case, you need to know what makes you in that emotion, makes you have that emotion or feel that emotion that those that you love need you to feel. And so you need to study what makes you feel that way. So when they need you to be a certain way, there's nothing worse than unpredictable people. Nothing. Nothing worse than wondering what he's going to be like next time. Or what is she going to be like next time. Now, I cannot make people around me predictable, but I can work hard to study the science of emotion so that I will not be the person that people say, I wonder what he's going to be like this time. Is he going to throw a fit? That's one reason why when I write a tough letter, I let it sit for a while on my desk before I mail it. And usually I don't mail it. I wait until my emotion of anger is over so I can send that letter by my will rather than by an emotion that was caused maybe by some letter that I got. When I realize it's business meeting night, I prepare myself for it.